once again, it's Max and Stacy with the Truth About Markets for RDU New Zealand Christchurch.
Yeah, buddy.
Is that all you have to say to the people of New Zealand this week?
It's all happening. It's all happening. So, an interesting week in the markets. Stacy. Clearly, the story of the week has got to be, gold price moving higher, I would say. That's pretty important.
Gold price moving higher, IMF saying they're going to sell their gold, and, of course, the return of the carry trade, of which New Zealand was a huge recipient the first go-round with the yen carry trade.
Right.
Now there's a thing being called the dollar carry trade. You want to tell them what's going on and what to expect in New Zealand?
Oh, yeah. Well, the dollar carry trade is fascinating. Remember, we did that movie about the yen carry trade, and we flew to Iceland and pointed out to the bankers there that their economy was probably going to collapse within a year. Of course, they said, no, it's impossible. They're all now freezing and unemployed. But the dollar carry trade is the same idea. Bankers and folks can borrow or sell short dollars and use the proceeds to put that into higher yielding currencies. Let's say the New Zealand dollar or the Kiwi dollar or other currencies. They make the positive spread, positive carry. And it opens up a very, the moral hazard, as it's called, is quite remarkable, because the more you borrow, the more you make. You see, the more risk you take, the more you're making, which makes sense on some level, unless when it collapses and the banks who took these risks and made this money claim that they need bailouts and then the government bails them out. Then it gets into this whole area of state-sanctioned profitability, of a command and control economy, of an oligarchy. Dollar shorters and dollar carry trade players are subtracting from the global economy, as were the yen carry traders. And the result is clear. You've got huge global unemployment, wages are crashing, and you've got, ecological holocaust, which is a direct result of the financialization and transactionalization of the global economy. Now, you came up with an interesting phrase recently to describe this whole debate between inflation and deflation. Tell the people.
Well, I came up with the name, but I think you have the better description of it, which is specflation, that there's no such thing anymore as inflation or deflation, because there's only a casino, because inflation and deflation are terms that are used in the economy, in a real economy. And as we do not have real economies any longer, perhaps it's better to call it something like specflation.
Right. Inflation or deflation are terms used when you have a benchmark to compare to, like gold. But since gold is not really part of any currency out there at the moment, and all you have are algorithmic trading and computer programs at these various banks competing with each other on the floor of the exchange and who can steal the money quickest, you're past the point of having free market capitalism, of supply and demand, price discovery. Those are all things that go with the history of economics up until the 21st century, when it went from a study and a system and an organizing principle of distributing risk and reward over the greatest number of people in the community as a way to efficiently engender a mutually beneficial competition, I would say. But now we're past the mutually beneficial competition of free market capitalism, and we're back to basically what I call the stealth oligarchy, the stealth casino gulag model, where people are basically being put into speculative ghettos, casino ghettos, using the techniques of the past oligarchs, but in a new 21st century way.
Well, and the biggest market internationally, globally, is the forex market, foreign exchange market. $3 trillion is traded every single day, betting whether the dollar is going to rise or fall. Betting whether the dollar is going to fall or rise against the Brazilian real, or whether or not the Brazilian real is going to rise or fall against the Kiwi dollar. So that's part of the speculation, I think, is this analogy I like to use of these zero gravity flights. So, one of the laws of physics or gravity is that it doesn't matter what the weight of the item, whether it's Max Kaiser weighing, say, 170 pounds, you're going to fall at the same speed as a, you know, 40-ton plane. You're going to fall at the same rate. So if I go to the edge of the atmosphere and throw you out of the plane, you're going to feel like you're falling really fast towards the Earth. However, if I put you inside a plane, which is going to fall to the Earth at the same speed as you, and drop the plane from the edge of the atmosphere, you're going to feel actually like you're weightless, because the plane around you is falling at the same speed. So you don't realize, it doesn't feel like you're plummeting towards the Earth. It's just going to feel to you like you're actually weightless. So that's what it seems like right now with all these wild gyrations and sort of instability, this feeling like we're weightless in a way, this kind of euphoria that everything's okay, when we're all just actually, it's all plummeting. The entire financial system is still plummeting.
Right. Well, yeah, like any system, natural system, you need gravity to make it work. I mean, planes fly because they're fighting gravity, and that fight results in flight between the thrust of the rockets over the, you know, the attractive power of gravity and the equals the forward motion of an airplane. So without gravity,
lift of the wings.
Yeah, you need gravity as part of any natural system. But in the financial world, you don't have any gravity. The gravity, if there was gravity, it would be in the form of gold bullion. If gold bullion was the basis for the world's global economy, that would be the gravity, and that would be the force that would demand accountability and transparency and honesty. But since you don't have any gravity, you don't have gold bullion, which is supporting any currency, you have, as you describe it, this weightlessness in economic space, where it's just a matter of speculative bubbles really going up and down, like a financial lava lamp. You know those lava lamps? You got the bubbles going up and the bubbles going down, and they're in kind of a fluid of speculation. And that's what you have in the global fluid lava lamp speculative illumination of a casino gulag model that is enslaving more people per day than it is liberating. So the number of people who are hitting the jackpot and divorcing themselves from the casino gulag is less than the number of people who are being indoctrinated and introduced into the casino gulag by probably 100 to 1. So every single day, 100 more people enter permanent destitution.
Yeah, but you also see, going back to these zero gravity flights, I mean, what they are is they send like a 767 up to the top of the atmosphere, or they send it 30,000 feet up, and then it just dives, right? The plane dives, and the people on board, like NASA trainee astronauts, they then get to experience zero gravity, or a simulation of it. It's not really zero gravity, it's just they're falling with the plane. But if you threw this person out of the plane with no parachute and they were just plummeting towards Earth, they would be terrified, right? They would be screeching. They would be, like, spinning out of control. But you put them inside a plane that is dropping towards the Earth, and they all, like, play around. They jump and they do flips, and they're like, wow, this is fun. Yeah. So it's all a perception. So this is like we're plummeting towards Earth, but because we're inside the global markets that are also plummeting, we're just, like, spinning around, and we're saying, wow, this is fun.
Right. So like at Goldman Sachs, they create algorithms to crash the market. But since they're inside the market, their perception is that they're crashing at the same rate as the market. Remember, Goldman Sachs stock was crashing last year, and it was rumored that they were going to go the way of Lehman Brothers and these other banks that went bankrupt. But because they live within the cozy environs of their government connections, the Federal Reserve, the Treasury, politicians and banks around the world, they're falling at the same rate as the global economy is falling. So their perception is that it's all fun and games. And instead of splatting on the ground like a Lehman Brothers did, they just got bailed out. So more of the Ponzi scheme, fractional reserve banking, fiat currency modeled, ersatz banking, phantasmagorical cotton candy to nowhere was injected at a greater speed than would have been experienced had they been allowed to have the repercussions of their illegal, amoral, morally hazardous, societally dangerous, ecologically holocaust-provoking banking model.
And we'll be right back after this music break. Right, we're back. Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert with The Truth About Markets. Now, I want to say, so we're talking about the return of the carry trade.
Right.
And this time it's the U.S. dollar carry trade. Now, a lot of that speculative money tends to go into, interest rate arbitrage, which, you know, would tend to come to a place like New Zealand, which its rates are very low, but it's, you know, relative to what they've been, but it's still much higher than many other places in the world where they're down at 0%. But the other thing is, like with the yen carry trade, a lot of that came into New Zealand, into Kiwi bonds, because of it was the Japanese housewife was driving that trade. Because, you know, they knew the region, it felt close to home, and it was a place that they chose to invest, to buy the bonds from New Zealand. Now, do you expect this to happen this time around with a dollar carry trade? And also explain what happens when a carry trade unwinds and how this might be bad with having the global reserve currency act as a carry trade.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, also, remember in Iceland, when everyone gave them all that money, they then used that money as the basis to go out and make hundreds of billions of dollars worth of acquisitions.
Yes.
I don't think the New Zealand banking system doesn't seem like they're going to be doing that.
No. They haven't done that to this point. Plus, New Zealand has, rich resources, don't they? Iceland is also rich in resources, but resources that can only really be used locally, which is the geothermal energy.
Right. Well, they risked their entire country on a few gambles at the roulette wheel. They lost, and the economy went bankrupt. Now, in New Zealand, I don't think the government there is going to allow a few bankers to securitize all those bonds, all that money that come in due to the dollar carry trade, and use it as the basis to make hundreds of billions of dollars worth of acquisitions and risk the entire country's economy on the roll of the dice.
Well, also in Iceland, because of the carry trade situation, a lot of Icelandic people took out mortgages in euro.
Yeah.
But they were earning in their own local currency, which to them, it looked like it was continuing to rise. The value of the Icelandic krona kept on rising. So they thought, wow, I'm paying back less and less each year as the euro drops against the Icelandic krona. So when the Icelandic krona crashed by like 50% within a month, all these people got caught with a doubling of their costs of their mortgage payments.
Right. Right. Now, one of the ways that people end up deluding themselves into taking on all this risk is they think that their risk is hedged. We saw this in long-term capital management. We saw this with the stock market crash of 1987. I remember when I was working on Wall Street at the time. We would sell customers this idea of portfolio insurance, that if you had a $1 million portfolio, you could buy puts on that portfolio that would go up in the same amount of money that your portfolio was going down. And so you had a riskless way to own those stocks. But if the portfolio insurance value exceeds the value of the underlying stock market, then it doesn't pay off because you've got, it's just mathematically impossible. But nobody bothers to do the math, and they feel that they've got, you know, this is where the credit default swap market comes in. They write insurance in excess of the underlying values, and then they write insurance on the insurance to cover for the shortfall, which, of course, is in excess of the underlying reinsurance. So they write another contract of a reinsurance, and that's how you end up with a quadrillion in credit default swaps. It's all basically trying to insure the uninsurable. But instead of admitting that it's uninsurable, you write more credit default swaps. You know, again, the analogy of Mickey Mouse in the movie The Sorcerer's Apprentice, when he's chopping up the broomsticks and the broomstick chopping up ends up carrying more water and flooding the wizard's castle. This is exactly what happens. But instead of paying a price for having destroyed the wizard's castle, these guys just get a bailout from the government for the most part, except for the occasional, you know, sacrifice like a Bernie Madoff.
Well, but the return of the carry trade also suggests that yet again, we're going to have another round of zero investment in real productivity growth and real capacity. And it's all going to just speculation.
Well, what's amazing about productivity growth, it's really amazing. Because on paper, it looks like productivity is going up. Because very, you know, this is remarkable because the measure of productivity is output over hours worked. Okay, that's basically what productivity is. If you or your output is greater for the same amount of hours, you know, you according to the economists are being more productive. But what's remarkable is as more people become unemployed, and the overall output, which is generated through financial engineering, as measured by the amount of risk that's being injected into the system, is considered to be a manufactured product like a truck or a tank, and people lose their jobs, they're saying that the productivity is increasing. But when you look at what that means, it means more people have lost their jobs and that the amount of financial engineering has increased.
Yeah, Jim Willey was also pointing out that, I think it was Jim Willey, it might have been Mish or somebody like that, but they were saying that if you look at the growth of debt, that in fact your output was being sold to people who didn't actually have money. So it was increased output because people were buying more in debt. So there was no real productivity because it was just forward demand brought forward because people were able to use it on a credit card.
Right. So it just skews that part. So the productivity number is cooked, the GDP number is cooked, the employment numbers are cooked, the CPI numbers are cooked. All the basic fundamental numbers that people use to gauge where the economy is going are completely fallacious and worthless. And naturally, all conclusions based on that are equally worthless.
Well, but that brings us back to the dollar carry trade. I keep on wanting to say the yen carry trade, but it's the dollar carry trade now. Now, you remember when the yen carry trade unwinds, and you would have definitely felt the experience here in New Zealand, because when they unwind, they sell all their holdings, i.e. they would have been Kiwi bonds, and buy back the yen. Everybody does the same thing at the same moment. So the yen rose very fast, and in previous unwinds, I think during the 1987 crash, it went up something like 19% in the course of a week. So what happens when the dollar experiences the same sort of unwinding activity that happens with carry trades?
Well, this is incredible because the dollar is the world's reserve currency. And 3/4 of all the transactions in the world are done in dollars. So 3/4 of the economy of the world is going to experience these wide 20% fluctuations in the underlying values on a regular basis. And that's speculation. That's not inflation or deflation. It's pure speculation.
Yeah, but on both sides of it, right? So when the carry trade will tend to drive down the value of that currency at first, so the dollar will decrease in value, but it'll send all sorts of mixed signals, right? It'll create malinvestment because it'll seem like things are good because everything will seem to be going down in price. But then when the carry trade unwinds and the dollar jumps by 20% in the course of a week or two, then everything, chaos is created.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, I think you're predicting that the dollar could jump by 20% in a week. Okay, this is a forecast that, as far as I know, nobody is making. So let's just say, okay, your forecast, Stacey Herbert, the dollar could jump 20% in a week, given the unwinding of this dollar carry trade and the ensuing economic chaos that results. I think is a fairly astute forecast.
Yeah, first it will have to go down a bit as more and more, because it has to look safe for a while, because you have to get more and more people to come in to the carry trade, and they all then, and because it seems to get better and better and better and easier and no risk to earning this money free, everybody then gets in it and they all become deluded and irrational, and then it all unwinds, yeah.
Well, the way to make money on this speculation is with straddles. Which I don't know how much time we have in the segment, but
Well, I guess we have to actually break for another music break here, and we'll be right back in just a few minutes. Right, we're back, Max and Stacy, with The Truth About Markets. Max was talking about straddles.
That's right. So volatility can be traded like anything else. They even have the volatility index, right? The VIX, which is a measure of underlying volatility. The entire options market is based on the options volatility formula, which is a Nobel Prize winning formula, which is able to quantify risk and quantify implied value. So volatility is tradable. Now, if your forecast is correct and you're going to get dollar fluctuations of 20% or more in a week, then what you buy a straddle, which basically means you're buying a put and a call at the same strike price. So let's say the dollar index is at 76. So let's say the strike price is, let's say it gets down to 75, and the strike price is at 75. You know, this is the price in which the option trades are settled. So you buy a put and a call. Let's say you buy a put for $3 and you buy a call for $3. So your total cost of the straddle is $6. Now, in order to make money, the underlying dollar has to move in one direction or the other by in excess of $6. Anything above $6 move, you make money. If it stays during the life of the option, which might be 3 months or 4 or 5 or 6 months, if during the life of that option the index does not move a total of 6 points in either direction, which is your cost of the straddle, then those options expire worthless. Now, so in this way you can buy volatility, but you can also sell volatility. So in other words, you don't have to buy the straddle, you could sell the straddle. You know, if you're buying a straddle, somebody is effectively selling that straddle. They're making a bet that they are allowing you to, they're collecting $6 from you when you buy that straddle, and they've got $6 in their account. If the straddle is successful from your point of view, the buyer, they will have to pay out more than the $6 that they collected from you as the straddle seller. If, in fact, the straddle is worthless, then they get to keep that $6.
No. Didn't Warren Buffett just famously make a giant bet along these lines where somebody bet him like a crazy number, like $1 billion, that the U.S. economy, the GDP would not have grown in the year like 2015? And he made a huge bet that's got a lot of press in the last year.
I think his bet was that the market would be making new highs over a certain period of time.
Oh, yeah, the S&P, yeah.
And for the first 6 months, he was, quote, underwater on this bet by a remarkable amount of money. But since the market's rallied back up near 10,000, I think he's getting closer to break even.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen for another few years anyway.
Well, you still have unrealized gains or losses, which, as far as accounting goes, could be a factor, you know, on your quarterly and annual statements. But, you know, it's probably an over-the-counter, off-the-books trade that he doesn't put on his 10K or 10Q, the quarterly or annual statement.
But that's kind of, he's more usually known as an investor, rather. That's like a speculation, right? That's betting that the S&P will be at a certain point in 2012, say. And somebody else is betting that it won't.
Very un-Warren Buffett-like to make this type of speculation. It falls under the category of what on Wall Street you would call weenie waving.
Well, he himself says it's a sure bet, therefore it's an investment.
Right, but it's a matter of, you know, weenie waving, who's got the biggest weenie. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, but and also everybody walks into Harrah's or MGM Grand thinking they're making a sure bet as well.
Well, probably, you know, Warren Buffett knows that he's a big buyer of stock, so I'm sure he's thinking that if he just continues to buy stocks himself with his, you know, $200 billion company, that it's going to offer some support. It's kind of like the Buffett put, in a way, as far as the stock market goes. Because, in other words, if he wouldn't make that bet, then he should sell all of his stocks and go home. Because if he doesn't think the market's going to be higher, why would he even bother being in the market at all? So it's really, you know, the hedge fund industry, whoever who made the bet, is thinking that if he offers Warren Buffett that bet, he's going to take it, because not to take it would be an admission that his entire model is flawed. So he has to take it. Meanwhile, the person making the bet is probably hedged on their bet. So they probably don't have much exposure at all. So again, it's just weenie waving. It's like, it's the equivalent of, you remember, of 10 years ago when people in the dot-com business were buying astronomical sums of money for grilled cheese sandwiches with the image of Jesus on them, because these betting companies were not allowed to advertise in the States, but they did these incredible stunts like buying a grilled cheese with the face of Jesus on it for a large sum of money, and the press reported on that. Mm-hmm. So they got this incredible advertising and public relations boost for the money that they paid for the Jesus, and that's generated enough business to pay for the money they paid for the grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah, that was a forgotten, so that hasn't happened though for quite a while, that there was a Party Gaming or something, one of these companies is buying up all these things, these eBay products.
Yeah, well, that brings the idea of gambling, and gambling in the States, as I've been saying now for a few years, they're going to have to increase the gambling in these various states as they go out of business. So I think Kansas just introduced legislation that would allow for more gambling in the state of Kansas. I think you're going to have gambling in every state in America. And then they're going to do gambling online, which they've resisted because obviously Las Vegas and the organized crime that runs Las Vegas have an interest in not sharing the pie with online gamblers. But I think that eventually their influence and lobbying interests will fail to stem the tide of online gambling in the United States. France is already introducing online gambling this year, right?
Yeah, a few of the existing companies are allowed to now offer it online, but I think from April or May of 2010, all sorts of competition can come in and you can start offering bets online.
Right, so the various online companies will lobby that, well, it's all the business going to France and we need to compete. So they'll introduce legislation to make online gambling. So you're going to let the speculation environment of people tied to their telephone with 20, 30, 40 bets on simultaneously, betting on political outcomes and chance outcomes and entertainment outcomes and stock market outcomes and all these other different things will be the only basis of the economy going forward. And every day somebody will hit the jackpot and they'll be able to escape the casino gulag. But everyone else is just a sweatshop in the casino gulag, tied to their iPhone, tied to the gambling spread set by Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan. And they'll love it because, after all, there's a winner every day, isn't there?
Well, that's right. And that's it for this week's Truth About Markets for RDU 98.5, Christchurch, New Zealand. If you want to send us an email, you can send it to, which one to use, info@maxkaiser.com.
Bye, y'all.